Welcome to the Inside the 90 podcast, your home for everything soccer. Today we are discussing sports leadership and being a captain with my good friend, Jeff Carley. Jeff is a leadership expert and the owner of SummitLeadershipChallenge.com and the Leadership Exchange podcast. In this show, we discuss how we grew up with sports, what we like in a leader or a captain, and how to develop those skills. So sit back and enjoy. This is the Inside the 90 podcast.
Well, Jeff Carley, I appreciate you coming on the show, my friend. It's good to see you. Welcome.
Yeah, good to see you too. Thanks for having me on, man.
What do you think are, if someone wants to be a leader, where do they start?
I think that's one of those questions that are so overwhelming and so daunting that it's like looking up at a mountain. You're like, man, I don't know how to begin this thing. I don't know how to get to the top. I know that's where I want to go, but I don't know how to get there. Like anything else in the world, before you crawled, you had to do the awkward flopping around. Like, I know your daughter, she watching her grow up, right? She had to do the flopping around before she starts crawling. And then you do the little hold onto the couch and you start moving around. Leadership's no different. You can't just attend a course or read a book and slap a leadership title on you and think, yep, you're a leader. So for me, man, full disclosure, just get in there. Nobody cares if you're perfect. They just care if you try.
So do you think that is there too much trying? Like, when does it come to the point where, hey, man, you're trying too hard, just back off a little bit?
I've never experienced somebody trying too hard. But what I can say is I've experienced somebody trying really, really hard, but for the wrong reasons. You know, like in the military, you're newly promoted up. Or, you know, my experience as an adult has been in the military. But when you're newly promoted up, you want to make a good impression. You want to come out swinging. You want those above you that promoted you to go, man, we got the right person. We put the right individual in this position. So you flex on your people. And a lot of the time that looks like a micromanagement approach. You're making sure that nothing falls through the cracks. So when you hear somebody say you're trying too hard, I think that's what we're trying to say, is that that micromanagement piece is a little too much. We need your help in certain areas, but not every area. And as new leaders, I think sometimes we have a hard time drawing that line.
So if someone wants to just, you know, where's a good place to start? Would it be in your local, your friends group? Would it be just, you know, at your office,
just with normal people,
or in this case, sports?
Yeah, practicing your leadership skills first and foremost, it's got to start with you. A lot of what leadership is consistency, whether that's on the field, on the pitch, you know, whether that's in the baseball diamond, on the volleyball court, basketball court, it doesn't matter. Most great leaders, when you ask them where they started with themselves. And a lot of the times that looks like practice. I know when you and I met, we were talking before we started this. We met when we were 18, 19, loved soccer. We knew that we wanted to play the game and we wanted to play it better than how we were playing it right there. And we had a coach that he wasn't bad at that community college or what have you, or even in real college, they weren't bad, but they only gave you so much. You had to build on what they gave you. You had to show your own willingness to get there. So what we did was we led ourselves, and as iron sharpens iron, we sharpened each other. We played, you remember that volleyball soccer game that we were playing, or the tennis soccer. Yeah. You remember that? Yeah. We played that for hours. For hours, like nonstop. And then that made us a little bit better in the game. And then we would watch some game, or we would talk about different ways to play it. And eventually through leading ourselves, we got better and better and better. And then people started to look at us and said, hey, they went from here at, okay, they're at a decent level to, man, I really want to be there. And they started to come ask us, how did you get here? How did you do that? And so we would lead or share our experience with those people who came to us first. But if you don't have people coming to look for you, leading yourself is a great place to start, because people won't follow you if you can't prove that you can do it yourself.
It probably comes down to a lot of self-discipline too. You know, if you're disciplined in yourself, saying, hey, I will go to, you know, in our case, you know, when we were kids, is, you know, we would go to the community college and we go grab a ball and we would play soccer for, you know, 3 hours or whatever it was, skip class, I don't know. and we would literally just kick around the ball, right? So the self-discipline is, you know, and I tell a lot of younger players this, is that you know, like when I was growing up, right, and I was playing club and travel ball and everything, is that you can't just go, right? You have to put in the work somewhere, right? The more disciplined and more better you are at training, the better you are with, you know, becoming a leader, I would think, right? Because, you know, like when I was growing up, you know, I grew up on a ranch, right? And, you know, when I was a kid, you know, when I played baseball and everything and basketball, you play in your driveway under the lights of your garage, right? And this is in, you know, Gulf Coast, Texas, right? So you got the June bugs flying around and they land on your face, you freak out, and you're just kind of like, oh, that was like the opponent slapping me in the face, and you shoot a ball or whatever, the ball, you know, rolls off into the darkness down the street, and you work up enough courage to run down the street to come back, and oh man, the boogeyman didn't get me. I guess I'm good. I guess I can keep playing. It's the whole thing from, like, you know, I make the Space Jam analogy, right? Michael Jordan was, what, how old? 12, 8 or 12, maybe, in the beginning of Space Jam, right? And he's playing shots in the driveway, and his dad comes out like, what are you doing? It's like, well, I'm trying to play for North Carolina. Brother, you're 8 years old. We got to start somewhere, right? And if you're disciplined as a younger person, right, it's like, I'm not a football player. I like football, but I don't tell Bill Belichick how to coach his team, right? But it's Bill Belichick, right? That stature and that status comes with him. So if you're self-disciplined and you put in the work, that would transfer over to being a good leader. You know what other players should do, you know about formations, you know about different things, and people see that in you, they can see a leader.
Right. But to that point, it's a consistency in those aspects too. It's not just a short burst of dedication, a short burst of attention to detail. It's that consistency over time. Like, Bill Belichick doesn't just win a game and everybody's like, oh, well, he's just awesome now. No, he built up a career, 20, 30, 40 years worth of information, knowledge, and consistency that led to those results. And that's what we're doing in leadership too. A lot of the time we look at those people at the top and we're like, man, we just need to make one right decision. We need to change one influence. We need to do one thing. Where in reality, we need to do a million things before we can get there.
Yeah. Self-dedication is what we talked about, but you know, when I was growing up, and I'm sure you were the same way, is like, if you didn't do your homework, you can't play, right? You know, you got to pass all your grades, right? Yeah. And this kid might be, and even as when I coach, I'm like, hey, man, this kid might be a stud. All right, cool. So he plays for the Dynamo youth team. All right, good for you. Guess what? You can't pass arts and crafts. You're not playing. It's that simple. Like, it's not like I have a choice. And that's like a bylaw written into the game, you know. So, it's one of those things where I wish kids these days kind of saw. And there are, of course, the kids that come up through the programs and everything. Soccer is a little different though, because soccer is notoriously hard to come up through the youth levels up into the pro. And everyone knows, you know, the Christian Pulisics and the Weston McKinneys and all these other guys, right? And you know, Weston McKennie plays for Juventus, and, you know, Christian Pulisic played for Dortmund, and then now he plays for Chelsea. But, like, soccer is notoriously hard for youth programs, depending on where you're at. If you're, like, in a soccer state, like, you know, Texas, California, I think Indiana is another really good one. So, like, unless you're in those kind of programs, and, like, ODP programs, remember ODP when we were young? Yeah, and so, like, unless you're in those programs or you have some sort of insight into those programs, it's hard to get into those programs. But that's good for exposure, though, right? To get exposed into, you know, different techniques and everything that can help you in how to leading a team and from the coaching standpoint and the player standpoint, right? If I'm a coach, though, right, I might have X amount of time under my belt. But do you think, if you're a leader, right, and you want to be a coach, right, Bill Belichick is a fantastic coach. There's no doubt about it, right? He's got rings. No doubt.
No doubt.
But do people want to play for him? If he went 0-12 this next year, do you think people would still want to play for him?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So is it you think it's the same thing with, like, Nick Saban? Like he's just fantastic, but he's kind of a obnoxious character on the sidelines, right? He runs up and down. He gets into,
yeah, but how is he in the locker room?
Right.
You know, how is he in the practice halls? Because you spend so much more time in those environments where the rest of it, you could say it's overzealous passion or a low emotional intelligence in that area. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's hardwired that way and he's that way 24/7. But the dude gets results, and I know some people they're in it for the results, or that's the environment. Because you look at what we do for a living, and there's different ways to approach everybody. I know for a fact that there's somebody that works with me that I cannot come at guns blazing. I cannot come that route. I have to go what I could assume is the Bill Belichick route, where I look at their attributes and their skills and what do you bring to the team. And then if I need to make a correction, I do it without being overly aggressive, where both of them will get results, but where one person needs aggression, the other person may not. And it's the mark of a good leader that knows that. And maybe this other guy, his team, that's what they all thrive on. So those are the kind of players he has around him. And the ones that don't thrive in that, they probably don't stick around very long.
Right. So, and you don't see what goes on behind the scenes, right? How many hours is he in, you know, math tutorials, right? You know, how much scouting is he doing? How much is he actually paying for people's, you know, players, you know, your high school players, junior, seniors, or whatever? Is he playing? Is the school or the program paying for these students to come to tour, you know, Alabama and, you know, all these different schools, right? So, do you think, like, what is the left and right limits when it comes to leadership? Like, when I get amped up, I tend to not yell but shout, right? I'm from Texas. I'm Italian, you know. So and there's other things that's kind of you know. So
right. So
what's the left and right limits? I tend to shout, right? I'm a very excited, energetic, enthusiastic person. So where's the limits at, right? Where's the left and right limits, right? You can't be a coach and just run out onto the field, because then you'll in soccer, you'll get bench warnings, yellow cards, whatever. So, right. But you see it all the time where there's this, you know, there's the box on the side of the soccer field, right? There's no manager. Watch Mikel Arteta from Arsenal. He does not stay in his box, right? Jurgen Klopp was notorious for running up and down to the corner flag, right? So where's the left and right limits when it comes to a manager? Obviously, enthusiasm and passion will get the best of you sooner or later. But where's the left and right limits?
Yeah, no, I love that metaphor, right? You're right. In soccer, you've got a go and no-go zone. You can do anything you want within your zone, within your lane. Leadership's not much different. You can coach anywhere on the field, right? So you start looking, apply this to a workplace, right? And your whole workplace is the whole field. Now, there's areas that a manager can go, and it's pretty common for them to be there, and we expect to see them there. Maybe that's the hallway. Maybe that's the break room, the conference room, individual offices within their scope, but you're not going to see an ops guy go over to a logistics planning team. You know, that's not their lane, so to speak. So that's kind of like their box, right? But what I realized is nobody cares where you go. You can go anywhere you want to. It's how you're in there, how you're going. So when you say, what's my left and right? I think what I'm hearing is, how do I interact with these people to make sure that I don't come out of their box or out of my box and get flagged for it, right? Because it's not the refs in this case in the workplace. It's going to be your players on the team that flag you. And it won't always be to your face, right? I mean, how many times have you had a leader where you felt comfortable enough if they're stepping outside their box? This is an aggressive, animated leader where you're like, all right, hey man, just letting you know you've crossed the box. I need you to get back over there. And then we can continue. We can converse, but this is your lane. Most of the time we don't do that with those kind of leaders, right? Because they're intimidating. They can use their powers that they have to influence you in a negative way. And that's uncomfortable and that's scary. So what do? A lot of the time it turns into a toxic environment where people are lying, hiding, and faking. They are avoiding those individuals that don't know their lane, right? In a negative way. Then we start talking behind their backs. And these are the leaders that we have these phrases, if they can get promoted, if they can do that job well, then I can too, right? How many leaders do you have right now in your profession where you're like, man, if they got promoted, I'm good. Those are those leaders that do not know their box, that do not understand their value where they are. So they try to go find it elsewhere. Now, that's a toxic, right? Now, what does that look like correctly? I too am a, what you call a leader, right? I'm the kind of individual, I'm charismatic. I'm like you. I was raised in the South, loud voice. I'm an animated person, live life with passion. My heart's pinned on my chest. Well, those kind of people, I realize they can go in and out of their box and nobody cares. And there's one simple difference between the two individuals, right? I and people like me go and build relationships with everybody on that team, not just the people in my lane, everyone, right? And it's not build a relationship for self-gain. It's not, all right, what connection can I make now so that I can call in a favor later? That happens organically. It's not something I'm looking for. Where that first leader, when they make relationships, you can tell it is for a reason. It's like there's a checklist, like a book, like a black book of who do I know and what can they do for me and what do I have on them? Where guys like you and me, we'll go out there with our passion, and sometimes our passion gets the better of us. 100%, that's happened. Most of the time, though, I've noticed I will have people that work for the other type of leader, manager, whatever, and they'll want to come work on my team because my heart's in the right place.
So
I'd say that's kind of my left and right there is your why behind where you're going and what you're doing.
Yeah, so I think that comes down to, you know, business, you know, like, for me, you know, people ask me all the time, well, why did you start 90, right? There's the 90 podcast, which is what we're doing. Then there's the 90 brand, which will be launched here soon. So, represent. So, when it comes to branding, people ask me, well, what's your why, right? Why do you want to be this, right? Well, I want to do this because I want to bring culture and what culture is in the sport and why it makes it different. I want to bring that to life, right? The culture here in the States for MLS, depending on what you think of it, right? I'm not an MLS fan. And the culture in England, Germany, you know, Spain is going to be different. Argentina, Mexico, it's all going to be different, right? And a lot of people don't know is that the teams from, you know, England, right? If you watch, you know, was it Welcome to Wrexham, right? If you watch that, right?
Right, yeah.
Great but, yeah, show. A lot of people don't know that show is essentially about culture, right? And that's what the town means to the team and what the team means to the town, right? And
100%.
You know, and it's that's what I want to bring to the brand, right? So people ask me the same thing, well, what is your why? Well, that's my why. Right. I don't. And on the other side of leadership, I don't know if anyone maybe asked to be a leader. Right. They might ask to volunteer. Yeah, I'll do it. OK, cool. And that just develops into a leadership role. I don't think anyone asked to be a leader per se. Maybe like they always say,
yeah,
no one asked to be a hero. Right. It just happens. You just happen to be right. Right. They always say that if it's true or not, whatever. But you just happen to be there at the right time. Right. Yeah. I don't know if anyone asked to be a, like, if you're going to be a captain of the team, right? Do you ask to be the captain of the team? You might say, hey, coach, if there's any opportunities coming out, like, do you think, you know, put my name in the hat? All right, cool. But what is he really going to look at, right? He might appreciate that you came to him, right? Because I have players that come to me, hey, cool, man. I'll keep that in mind. All right, cool. Right? But what do I really care about? It's how you act on the field, how you act off the field, right? If you're mouthing off to the referee, do you really think I'm going to care? Like, you know, no, because that's, yeah, now, granted, there's a lot of times, and you see it a lot in sports, is that you see other players defending their own players, right? Which I get, right? You see it in football.
Right. And then what does the captain
exactly.
do?
Exactly. What's the captain do? The captain, the captain will either go to his own player or he'll confront the referee, right? And that's typically what referees do. They typically go to the captain, say, calm your players down, right? That's a good captain. A captain that takes his own players away and, you know, confronts, maybe not confronts, but confronts his own player. Hey, dude, I got it. Let me take care of it. Whatever, right? It's not necessarily from the referee standpoint. It might not be who is actually wearing, who that individual is. Because you think the referee really cares who that player is besides, you know, ideology and, you know, it's Messi, it's Ronaldo, it's whoever, right? But who does he really care about? Who's wearing the armband? That's who he wants to talk to, right? Because when I was growing up, I was always told, don't talk to the referee unless you're wearing the armband. That's what I was always told. And but on the other side of it, I've also had captains that will go after other players. Like, I'm pretty sure I got a wicked tackle in one game. It was a rivalry game. And I just got clobbered. And it took me a couple seconds to get up because I was like, shit, that hurt, you know? And my captain confronted the other player from the other team. Like, hey, man, we're all here playing, and it's a game. We're heated, but they ain't calling. He gave him a little, little finger tap, on the chest, right? And that's kind of that's kind of like in sports. That's kind of like the thing where you're like, okay, he means business. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No. I want to touch on it before we get out of here, but the captain statement, what makes a captain a good captain is all those attributes, right? So in your experience, I'm kind of curious, I love soccer. I've always loved playing it, but I don't have the same experience that you and a lot of your following have. So I'm kind of curious if you could tell me from your experience, what makes the best captain? Like FIFA, right? You can make every attribute 100. Like if you could pick out some attributes that you're like, clearly these have to be pretty high. What does that look like for your captains?
So I kind of subconsciously put different roles of what players I watched and that I look up to into my role as a captain. Because when I was a captain, I wanted to be, there's the attributes of a player, right? Smart, right? You got to be smart on the field. Right, an offensive play versus a defensive play, right? Good tackles versus bad tackles, when to pass, when to press, when to push all sorts of stuff, right? Gotta be smart, right? So I tried to be smart on the field, right? And I think that for me, I want a captain that's smart. I want a captain that will defend me, but at the same time, put me in my place, right? And when I say put me in my place, it means off the field, right? I lose a lot of respect for people. Like, granted, I understand there's a time and a place, right? I lose a lot of respect for people if you just go at someone face on and you just destroy them publicly. That is uncalled for. It's unprofessional. All sorts of stuff, right? If I make a bad challenge and I cost a team, if I cost a team a win, I expect my captain to come up to me afterwards and be like, hey, dude, what was on your mind? What were you thinking? Well, I tried to do this and it's just a bad tattoo. It was bad timing, and I scissor kicked the dude. I Zinedine Zidane'd him straight in the chest. What are you gonna do? And I expect the captain to come to me and be like, "Hey, man, I get it. I need you to do this next time. I need you to circle back. They say in survival school, you gotta stay in your circle, right? I think that's pivotal, right? It's super important, right? So I expect the player, I expect my captain to back me up, on the field if I have a challenge and the challenge comes to me. But I also expect my captain to confront me, or confront the referee for me or defend me, right? So I expect both. I expect him to be honest, and I expect him to share with me what he thinks, his attributes are what he thinks the team should have, right? A lot of times in soccer, especially, you have a club captain, then you have a game captain, right? Who actually wears the armband during the game? It's the game captain, generally speaking, in my experience, but the other club captain, right? So we talked about, do you think Ronaldo, right? Cristiano Ronaldo, is the best captain.
Yeah.
Maybe not. You know, we don't know what he's like on and off the field all the time, you know, besides what's in newspapers and Instagram or whatever. But what we don't see is how many times he's, you know, lifting players up, right? What a lot of people see is that he's a captain because he's Cristiano Ronaldo, right? Why wouldn't he wear the arm?
Because of his skill.
Right? That's that ideology, right? Right. But do you, in, you know, and I don't know if I want those kind of, and we've all seen, and we talked about this, that Cristiano Ronaldo is a very passionate enthusiast, which we, everyone loves, right? We love that kind of stuff in sports and just in life in general too. But like when you, this is why we lose respect for my captain, is like when you get all pouty and whiny and you decide to take off your captain's band and walk off the field during the middle of the game, dude, hey, I don't care how many games you played. Like, to me, that's like uncalled for. You're disrespecting your team, the players, you know, the coach, the fans. Like, and to me, that's just uncalled for. You know, and he's been notorious for having his passion get the best of him. And I think we talked about the whole Arsenal thing with Granit Xhaka. You know, a couple, was it, I think, two seasons ago, maybe longer, where, you know, he was heckling back to his own fans, took off the captain's band and just walked off the field during a substitution, right? You know, and, you know, I don't want that in my captain, right? I expect my captain to be, you know, there before everyone else. I expect my captain to pick up the equipment. I expect my captain to task out other people, right? You know, people call it hazing or whatever. No, I ask, you know, a freshman, right, or a new guy, hey, man, pick up all the balls, make sure they're all accounted for. That's not hazing, right? That's responsibility, right? And I'm teaching them, you know, how to be the next captain, essentially, right? If me as a player, right, even if I'm like if I'm the captain, I'm a senior or on the team, right? I'm thinking high school, but right. If I know you by first name and you're a freshman, 1 out of 10, I know you by first name, that's a good thing, right? So
yeah, it's probably because, right, I respect you a little bit and, right, I need some good in you.
So I expect my captain, yeah, to stay there late. I expect my captain to put in more work than everyone else. I expect my captain to take people that are having trouble aside and work with them 1-on-1. I expect my captain to, you know, organize maybe fundraisers for the team. You know, I expect stuff like off the field, you know, hey guys, you know, I'm having a, you know, it's Sunday and it's Champions League, right? First game's at noon. Everyone is welcome to come over, right? That's a captain. Open his house to everyone on a weekend?
Right.
That's a captain.
Right, because those relationships that they're building in those off moments transferred to the right field.
I've had some good ones and I've had some bad ones.
Yeah. Okay. Everything I heard there was great. It was like the qualities of a leader. It's like in sports, I swear it directly translates into everyday life. I don't care what your profession is. You could be a dog groomer, a baker, you could be an engineer. I don't care what you do for a living. All of those characteristics that you just talked about transfer to those people. Smart was the first thing you said. I expect them to be smart. And then at first I was thinking IQ wise, because now I'm in trouble. You know, I score potato on my ASVAB, I'm in trouble. But then you started laying it out. No. Smart is the skills of the job and when to apply them and when to press.
On the field IQ.
Yeah. Yeah. But how do you get that though? Because none of us are born that way. None of us walk out on the field the very first day in little league kick around and we're the best of the best. You know, we get that through practice and training, normally through a mentor of some kind. Maybe that's a coach. Maybe that's a parent. Maybe it's another player on the team who just gets it, right? And so they're able to relay that information a little bit differently than how anyone else in your life does. And it helps you out. And they get the captain's armband for it, right? Because they're able to lead not only themselves, but their peers. So oftentimes when I notice, and I'll translate this into my world, right? So the corporate world, the organizations is when the coach, so these are your managers and those people above you, right? When they need the game plan to be executed a certain way, and they're not able to get through to you, I've noticed they go and ask the captain. Now, maybe that is one of your peers who's highly influential, high emotional intelligence, very charismatic, able to say things that the boss is saying, but say it in a different way that everybody's like, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, let's do that. It's like a team thing. Very rarely do you ever see, especially in sports, where you see the individual wearing the armband against the manager, against the coach, right? Now, they're always like a mitt and a glove. They are working tandem together.
Yeah. I've also seen, like, I expect, I kind of said it a little bit, but I expect my captain, and I said captain, right? There's plenty of leaders that aren't the captain, right? I'm not going to discredit those individuals, right? I was one of those individuals until I actually was able to get the captain's armband, right? But I expect my captain to, you know, press those buttons, right? You know, go to that edge of his left and right limits. And what can I do? What can't I do? What can I get away with in a responsible, legal manner, right? You know, and I think that the captain or the leadership somewhat of someone that I would want knows when to do that and when to, you know, hold his tongue, so to speak, right? Do you think what's a good habit for a leader, right? Like his good habits, like his daily habits, right? It's not like, oh, I took my vitamins this morning, right? I'm going to be a good leader, right? You know? So what do you?
Yeah, my Flintstones. Right.
So what's a good habit of a good leader then, right? Hey, I might have XYZ certifications, right? But that doesn't mean I'm going to be a good leader. So what is a good habit?
No, I'm glad you mentioned that certification doesn't make you a leader, right? Too often we go to a course or we read a book and we think, boom, I'm a leader now. And it's just simply not so. Now, knowledge is power, right? Knowing the right things to do on the field makes you more, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but it makes you more attractive to everybody else. It makes you more effective if you know what to do on the field, right? Like you said, you try to be a smart player. If you know what you're doing, read a book, you know, whatever, that makes you better. But the best habit I've heard of, Simon Sinek actually said this, but I'm going to go ahead and pretend it's mine because he's not here to defend himself, right? So he said one of the most difficult things about a leader is being the last one to speak. All right, so I'll give you an example. If you are sitting on the sideline of your sporting venue of choice, okay, and you see what needs to happen, okay, you realize your defenders are, and let's use soccer, right, that your defenders are a little too far up, or the offside trap's not working out, or maybe they're swinging down into your corner and you're just not, your first, second, third defender, they're not doing their job right. And you're like, okay, I know what needs to happen here. At the beginning of this podcast, you talked about two types of coaches. You talked about the guy who runs all the way down to the corner and he's screaming and yelling, you idiots, you should be doing this. Just letting them have it. Versus another guy who's sitting back and he's looking and they're both seeing the same game, but they're reacting differently, right? The leader who knows when to speak is the most effective leader. And that's the hardest habit to conquer because you know what's wrong. You know exactly how to fix it. So how those conversations normally go, halftime, you know, you pull them into the locker room, the coach rants and raves, you idiots, you need to be doing this, 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 this. Get out there and win. Or they go, you need to be doing this, 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 this. What do you guys think? Well, you've already told them what to think. It doesn't matter if they disagree with you. You're the boss. They're going to stay on your side. Instead, the most effective way, and this is a big personal thing, you go around and you go say, guys, that was tough to watch. I know you're capable of better. I've seen you do better. What do you guys see out there? You're on the field. What do you see that's holding us back? Now, this gives you a couple benefits. One, they may see something different that you don't actually see on the sideline because you think you're dead right because – I mean, you've got all this experience and you can see everything from your point of view, so you must be right. They may say something that changes your opinion. Well, now you don't have to renege on what you said because they don't know how you feel yet. Or the magic, this is really cool when this happens. They may say exactly what needs to be done and everything they said lines up exactly with how you feel, right? You're like, yeah, oh, I could have told you that. But instead of you going, yeah, that's right, that's exactly what I think, you go, you know what? That's a really good point. Let's put that into place and see where you guys can go. I really like your idea there, man. Keep that good vision. Keep that smart play. Keep bringing that to the team because it's going to help us. They don't need to know that you already knew all that. They need to know that you trusted them. So my number one thing that I practice every single day, and oh, let's be honest, Kyle, I don't always succeed here. I just don't, because we're all human and we all want to be right, especially in our career fields and what we do for a living, right? The alpha male wins. Whoever's right first wins. I've noticed I'm more effective when I'm the last to talk. So that is my number one leadership habit that I've tried. Now, through that, I have learned how to effectively listen. Now I'm listening not to respond, but I'm listening to think, regurgitate, maybe ask questions. Because the only thing I ask when I'm not giving them my opinion is clarifying questions. Why do you think that? What information do you have? Why? I turn into this little toddler. And that's always worked for me, man. So that's my number one thing I work on every single day. I actually have it written down on a sticky note on my desk. Be the last to talk.
I like that. Do you think, and this is something that I struggle with, do you think professionally and maybe even personally, that do you think it's hard for leaders not to take credit, but not even to take credit, but to not humble themselves? But you and I both know in our worlds, sometimes, maybe more and less, that awards matter, right? Decorations matter, right? You know, different aspects of that matters. And for me, and we won't get into the jobs and everything, but for me in my job, right, it's hard for me on a more personal scale to not accept responsibility, because I respect responsibility, but it's hard for me to, yeah, that was me. Hey, over here, that's me. You know, it's hard for me to not say, even if no one else in the room steps up and takes responsibility for something, it's hard for me to, it's not an ego thing either. It's just, I like appreciation. I always have, even as a younger kid and, you know, young kid, even as a, when I was young, I still liked to be appreciated. And it's hard for me not take credit, but it's hard for me to not get appreciated. And it's something that I've struggled with pretty much all my professional career, in my job. And even if in my soccer career, right, it's hard for me to accept credit or not accept credit and just sit on the sidelines, even though I know 100% that was me all day long. No one else. What's your thoughts on it? Like, how do you sit back and, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you lead from the front. I sometimes disagree and say, hey, I think it's better to lead from the back. It's because from the back, I can see everything and I know how to guide people and I know what I like to do, right? They say they always say like the first line of offense is a good defense. Right. Well, guess where the defense is? In the back. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you asked a lot. There's a lot here from my perspective. I love it, man. You're asking the question. The thing is, you're not the only one thinking this stuff. This books and books and books have been written about this subject, right? How
do I change being humble? Well, right.
Where,
so let's not get it confused. It's not how do I be humble? No, because I humble myself the best I can. But I want to be appreciated.
Yeah, no, it's what Freddy Roosevelt said. Walk quietly, but carry, or speak quietly, but carry a big stick. You're humble, but I'll use it if I have to. I want you to know it's there. And the problem is, think about as soon as you start learning, okay, from the day you start learning, whether that's speaking, talking, writing, school, doesn't matter what it is, just think the day we start learning something in society, is it about your accomplishments or is it about those people next to you accomplishments within our learning environment? It's about you, right? You can write, you can speak, you can spell, you know your colors, you can walk, you can run, you can pass this test, you know this information, you've mastered this skill. It's not, all right, Kyle, you've done a really good job learning how to walk. Now, you see Tim over here. Tim's not the best of walkers. You are, though. So can you go over there and help him out? And that's not how we work in this society. It's just not. It is you focused from the day you start learning, from the day you're born until the day you die. Now, here's the fun part. Now we have become a lot more intellectually intelligent, right? Emotional intelligence have gone up so much in the workplace that we understand that that approach doesn't work anymore. So what we say is, all right, to get promoted in your job, from day one of your job, whatever that is, you are taught how to do your job better. You go to training for your job. You take multiple classes for your job. You go to exercises for your job. Everything you do in your job is to get better at doing your job. Now, once you get good enough at your job, we're now going to make you responsible for everybody else in your job. Because you said, well, we didn't ask to be put as leaders. But that's the measuring stick that we use to put people in a leadership position. The second you are the best at something, they're like, oh, well, they must be good at telling other people how to do that something. So let's promote them. Then we get these people in these environments that they're really quick to take credit when things go right, because as I just said, we've been doing that our entire life. Oh yeah, I walked. Oh yeah, I got an A on that test. Oh yeah, I knew how to do that. What we're not really good at is when things go wrong. When things go wrong, we start pointing out all the limiting factors around us, all the obstacles, all the reasons we failed. Oh no, 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 no. You know, and I know, I got promoted because I am good at this job. So you know it's not me, right? It's got to be this person. They're the issue. Now, that shows my team I don't trust them. Now they don't trust me as much. And now they know I'm just in it for myself. This is why when you see people in your organizations, you're like, oh, they'll do anything to get promoted. They got promoted off of the shoulders of other people. Instead of saying, hey, buddy, I know how to do that job. Why don't you stand on my shoulders and I'll hook you up? Knowing that there's people that, okay, so I'm military, you know that, been in 15 years. There are people that I trained when I was a staff sergeant, right? I've been a staff sergeant since 2013. For anybody that doesn't understand what that means, whenever you first join, it's all about your job. Then you get this magic rank where it's about not just you anymore. It's your first time in your career where they're like, okay, you may have been really good at your job, but now it's also about these other people. It's complicated to grow from there because it's tough, right? You got to go through the mental mind shift. Well, I got pretty good there, but I focused so much on helping other people, I forgot to help myself. So that's the part where you're like, hey, you got to get your awards. You got to get your recognition. Otherwise, people think you're not good at your job anymore. And there's this dichotomy of leadership. It's a struggle. And so I finally figured it out. And now I'm here. I'm able to move on. But there's people here now that I work with now that have been in the military for 9 years and they outrank me. I call them boss. They outrank me, and not because they've been in longer, but because they've had people in their life that have picked them up. So my first shift, my first mental aha moment was no longer, I've got to have credit for everything. I need everybody to think I'm an amazing person. No, it's great. It's great when they do. Let's not say that acknowledgement of doing a good job is not important, because it is, right? There's a whole theory based on how that works, that if you keep like the horse and the carrot, right? That horse will walk up any hill as long as that carrot looks good enough. But if that hill gets too steep and the carrot gets too small, the horse stops walking. So you got to adjust the trick for the work. And our personal lives, our work lives, well, they're no different. I have realized I just needed to change my carrot. Instead of my carrot being an award and an attaboy and a pat on the back, it was now my people getting that. Because to me, I put my value into them instead of just myself. And that's a lot easier to say than it is to do. I've had a lot of success doing that, and I've had a lot of really high moments. But with that has come a lot of passover on promotion opportunities and a lot of low moments in my life too. And I've really had to put my life into perspective and what is it I'm doing and why am I doing it? And as long as that answer was always positive, I keep going.
And so just the
But yeah, that's kind of my thing.
To kind of close this out the next couple of minutes, you as a leadership expert and, you know, development and everything like that, what do you think in the sports world qualifies someone should have as a leader? Or, you know, if a player is listening to this and they're trying to become have that leadership role, where do you think they should start? Sure. And what are some attributes or qualities they should start to develop?
Yeah, no, that's great. For anybody out there, you're trying to improve your position, you're trying to improve your influence. I would find those people first and foremost that have been where you want to go and ask them how they got there. Now, the route may have changed a little bit from their experience, but it's still going to be a lot of similarities there. So I would go and ask for a mentor somewhere. I would go and look for somebody that has done exactly what it is you want to do so they can start to get you moving forward. Two, I would say you got to work on yourself. The whole being the last one to speak, the one being willing to help others and yourself, but put them up just a little bit more and be okay with them getting that recognition. That goes a long way. In the sports world, I know that skill doesn't always equal position. And so you've got to work on that personal aspect too. You got to be able to control those emotions when it's challenging. You spoke earlier about the cards on the field and how that feels when you get a call that seems unjust, unfair. And our first response is go tell that ref they're number one, right? Old-fashioned American Sign Language. We want to do it, but that's not always the best approach for the best tomorrow. So it's having that maturity and being willing to sit back on it and let that opportunity go to tell them they're number one so that tomorrow you can be in a better place than you were today. And be consistent. Always be consistent. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. You're never going to get anything of value. You're never going to get any position, any award, any prize, anything at all, period, that comes cheap, fast, and easy. It's never going to happen. Anything that you're going to put on your wall or that you're going to put on your heart and say, I did that. That was a moment for me. It all comes off of hard work and dedication. So just know that. Remind yourself constantly that that perspective needs to be your perspective. Yeah. That it's okay that these things
take time. Something that kind of that I struggle with is knowing when to step away and take that step back. Like I said, I'm a very enthusiastic. I'm very passionate. I've played in alumni games where I was just ruthless, right? And can't get the heat, stay off the field. You know what I mean? Right? I'm not a brute, right? Uh-huh. Like, what's the term in hockey? The cager. You know?
They made a whole movie out of it.
I forgot what it's called.
It was a stickler guy.
Yeah. So, and I'm not that guy though, but I would surely put you in your place. You know, if you step out of line, and for me. Even as a coach and as a player, you know, and it's hard for me. It'll be even harder when, you know, my kids grow up and everything, when to step back and, you know, let the reins off, you know, like it's hard for me. I was notorious for being offsides, right? I can't tell you how many times I gave the referee countless times, you know, how many times I got the whole, you know, come here, you know, and you're like, yes, sir, blah, 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 whatever. You just kind of put your tail between your legs and you walk away and you're just like, mother, nowhere near was I offsides, blah, blah. How'd you see that from way over there? You were at least 30 yards away. I was on the run going the opposite direction. How did you possibly see that? For me, and I think it's a good thing as a leader, we kind of mentioned it, is when to just swallow your pride a little bit and know when to step back, right? I know 100% I was in the right, 100% up here, right? In your head, you know you're right. But does that really matter? You know? So, you know,
not all
right. So it's like, for me, it's something like when to walk away. And I'm kind of going that in my personal life and, you know, career wise of, you know, what's next and everything like that. So for me, it's hard to say, this is it, you know, and, I think that's a good quality in a leader. I mean, as a captain, even as like another player, is this when to just not swallow your pride, but know when to just walk away. And athletes, they're notorious for it, right? It's knowing when to walk away, right? Was it Landon Donovan retired like 3 times? Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan played in a whole nother sport. Tim Tebow, right? Played in another sport. right? When to walk away, right? And there's obviously different reasons and caveats to that. We get it, but no one's time to just say, hey, this is it, right? And that's something that is a hard pill to swallow. And I think if anyone has experience in that, reach out to me. Jeff, I appreciate you coming on. Where can everyone find you and how can they reach you?
Yeah, man. Hey, thanks for letting me do this with you. This is really fun. I know we're friends and we go way back, but this is awesome. I love what you do. I love what you stand for. And I love the risks that you're willing to take in life. Y'all, he's got some big stuff coming down. I can't wait to support you. It's awesome. If you want to support me, you can find me at the Leadership Exchange. If you're looking at podcasts and things of that nature, my show is called the Leadership Exchange. Otherwise, I do have a dedicated website. It's called summitleadershipchallenge.com, summitleadershipchallenge.com. And we post all kinds of helpful tips in there, weekly, daily blogs. We are a one-stop resource for practical leadership information. So a lot of the times when we're out there, we digest some stuff that's spoken at the 30,000-foot level, and it's really hard to apply it to our daily life. Well, that's the gap I'm trying to fill. So I'm trying to give us stuff that we can literally take, read 2-3 minutes while you're on the john in the morning and put it in your daily life, make it a routine and be better for it.
Stop scrolling through Instagram and read a Jeff Carley blog. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend that said that anything you want to know about the world as far as news, current events, anything else, if he can't read it while he's on the John or on the Golden Throne, ain't worth knowing. So that's the approach I'm taking. 3 to 5 minutes max, and I'm done.
That was Jeff Carley, leadership expert and owner of SummitLeadershipExchange.com and the Leadership Exchange podcast. Make sure you reach out to Jeff if you have any questions or comments. Jeff and I go way back, so this was a conversation that both of us thoroughly enjoyed. Thank you for listening to the Inside the 90 podcast, your home for everything soccer. We have so much in store for you, and we can't wait for you to share. Stay tuned, and make sure you check out our social media channels. Thank you.